Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Show. Coming up, it's the end for Lee Johnson in Edinburgh. Who next for the Hibbies hot seat? Celtic's injury crisis. Can Brendan Rodgers strengthen before their trip to Ibrox? And we'll break down the goings-on in the Championship, League One and Two. Yes, everyone, step up. Step right up. The medical round of madness in Scottish football has gone another gear. The first managerial departure of the season already arrived, 3 games into the Premiership, and the transfer clock is ticking down, and there's so much to be enjoying about their game, or our game. Joining me this week, he's the head that keeps on giving. Head of creative at Melbourne FC, that is. It's Finlay Marx. Hello, Finlay.
Hello. I'm unsure if that was a double entendre there. I don't know. I preferred the Mel and Ball stuff. Stick to Mel and Ball.
Because you're baldy heat. And he's a fully paid-up member of the Tartan Army, leader of the Legion of Scotland supporters in London. It's Sky Sports' Anthony Joseph. How are you, pal? Long time.
Yeah, all good. Yourselves?
Not bad, mate. Not bad. Should say to anyone who's enjoying this podcast already, or just like to rage at us on social media, you can subscribe to us on YouTube now. You can also follow us on Twitter, TikTok, and even Facebook. I don't use it, but it's still going. But whatever podcast listening platforms you use, leave a classy comment because it really promotes the show. And that's what we want to do. Anyway, funny stuff. Finn, what have you got for us?
The best thing that I saw over the course of the weekend, I think a lot of people probably will have seen it by now, but I just loved it. It was Ali McCoist raving it up in Ibiza with, as he describes, the main man, Calvin Harris.
Unbelievable.
It's fantastic. He's a massive Bruce Springsteen fan, Ali McCoist, and he said he put Calvin Harris up next to Springsteen. I was like, that's a pretty interesting top two to have, you know, the boss and Calvin Harris. But I don't know, I think in my mind's eye I was just hearing things like, I've got to say, Rory, he really does like all the girls. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind, Arrow. No doubt they were all born in the 80s. So I think Ali McCoist was in his element out there doing that.
I'm a big Calvin Harris fan, and I saw his Insta videos, as in Calvin Harris's Insta videos from that night first. And I was just thinking, oh man, that looks amazing. And then to then see a picture of Ali McCoist thinking that he'd be in the crowd there bouncing up and down to that, it's just... No. Blows my mind a wee bit. So.
Mad weird little fact. Okay, that's not. I know this isn't about football at all. Calvin Harris grew up like 5 doors away from me.
Ah, he's from Dumfries, isn't he?
Yeah, I've got a primary Callside primary school. I've got the. Do you ever do that at primary school where you get a tea towel of like you'd have to draw what you look like? Yeah. Did you have that? Did you? That was a Scottish thing, right?
Yeah, of course.
So I've got a tea towel of basically as my brother. So my brother and Calvin or Adam. It's not his real name. His name isn't Calvin Harris, it's Adam. Anyway, I've got a tea towel of my brother and like looking like a weird stick man straw character, Scarecrow. Anyway, and then Calvin Harris is there. He's got a massive head. I'll maybe post it. I'll send you a picture of it next time I'm up the road. It's really funny.
Oh, you should. That'd be amazing. We should put that out on our Instagram channel. That's social gold, that Calvin Harris's primary school tea towel.
Primary one. Yeah, it'd be good. My mum always said he ate a full packet of custard creams as well.
What, in a day?
I don't know, whatever. But my mum always said, that boy owes me a packet of custard creams. Anyway, got off on one. Anything else we've seen?
I also really enjoyed seeing a little snippet from Kamar Roof's Instagram where he's gone away on a wee camper van holiday with his family.
Can he go on holiday? Is there not a big game coming up?
I don't think he's in the Rangers European squad, which is probably why he's taking the time to do it. But also, you know, he's played his one game of the season. We'll get into this, but he's played his one game of the season. So that's him injured for the rest of the season now. So should go off and have a lovely time.
Polonia working this one well. Xerxy, and he squeezed it past to Ferguson! Off the mark this season, the Scots. His 8th in Serie A, and he gives Bologna a well-deserved lead here at the Allianz.
A bit of news, guys. There was a big moment for a Scottish star in Italy. Lewis Ferguson scored, opened the scoring against Juventus. It finished 1-1 against Juve. It's his first goal of the new campaign, but it takes his tally to, I think, 8 goals, which brings him ever closer to a pretty famous Scottish superstar, probably the best Scottish footballer ever. The Scottish player who's got the most goals in Serie A, as a Scot, I should say. Do you know who that is?
Surely Dennis Law. I think he had one season at Torino and got a dozen goals or so. But the goal's fantastic. Like, it is really an absolutely brilliant wee finish right across the goalkeeper. Kind of gets a bit of a break of the ball, but it's a 1-2. It's great. It's so nice to see these players. And he's only, how old's Lewis Ferguson? About 24, 25?
He turned 24 last Thursday.
It's great to see those players not just going to those leagues and holding their own, but, like, you know, thriving. Like, he's become such an integral part of that Bologna side. And looking at it from the national team point of view, I'm really excited by having Ferguson, hopefully, as a much more integral role to the national team, as something different in midfield and cover. Because, you know, with the different international breaks, you do get injuries to players at certain times of the season or whatever. And we've got a fairly settled starting side and players that will come in. But you can't do much worse than a goal-scoring midfielder from Serie A to come in to replace one of your midfielders if the situation needs it.
I think he's ready. I think he's totally ready to be a starter for Scotland. I think he could take a few positions, to be honest. But the biggest news, guys, over the weekend was, of course, the departure of the much maligned Lee Johnson. So to get a feeling amongst the fans, we spoke to Matty Fairney from Hibs supporting podcast Long Bangers.
Do you think you will be manager next week?
Oh, thank you.
Can I just ask you about the fans today as well?
Yeah, brilliant. I love the fans. Thank you.
Okay.
Matt, thanks for joining us. Hopefully you're not too downbeat over the weekend. But it has been a weekend that's ended for Hibs where they've lost Lee Johnson. It's an opening 3 league defeats. You're about to drop out of Europe, let's be honest. But you never know. You know, stranger things have happened.
Not many stranger things.
True, but why is it now that Hibs have decided to get rid of Lee Johnson, in your own opinion?
I think the overriding factor would have been the reaction for the crowd on Saturday. So I think had there not been the Johnson, go somewhere else chance after Livy's second and third goals, he might have still had a chance to cling on to the job. But I think once you lose the crowd like that, in such a scale, because it wasn't one or two people singing it was large sections of the stand, then the board really had to act. I don't think there was any way back. And I think if you looked at Hibs' start to the season on paper, it was very favourable, even taking into account that you had the European games to contend with. Mm-hmm. All three of our opening three fixtures were teams that finished below us last season, two of them in the bottom six, and to come away for those results with no points and not looking like getting any points in any of the games, it's unforgivable, really.
Yeah, it's an odd one because, I mean, we've seen this before in Scottish football. Managers lose their job early in the season after a fairly supportive transfer window, shall we say. Let's just cast our mind back to when Lee Johnson was appointed as Hibs boss. What was the reaction back then? And where did it all start to go wrong? Because it's not just been really in the last couple of weeks, has it?
No, it hasn't. So it was generally well received, right? I would say it wasn't like unanimous that he was a popular choice. And it probably didn't help him that in the frame for the job at the same time as he got it, you had John Dal Thomason, who ended up at Blackburn and did quite well there. Also, Roy Keane was in the, or reported to be in the frame for the job, right? And obviously there was a lot of hype around that. And I think he would have been a popular appointment with the support. But generally, once Johnson was in the door and started talking about what he wanted to do with the team, people backed him. But then he had a disastrous League Cup campaign. I mean, we went out with a group that had Morton and Bonnyrigg and Falkirk, a group that Hibs should comfortably have gone through, you know, with no manager and playing our reserves, we should have gone through. And we went out. We also had Rocky Bashiri fielded an error in that period of time. And they just had like a really bad start to the season. It took the team a wee bit to get going. I think he made a comment about judge me after 12 games. And then we got to 12 games and we were looking all right. And then the backside fell out of the team, something chronic, and we went on this like winless run. And he just never really recovered it. He sort of had some really good moments, you know, like the 6-0 against Aberdeen, which was good. Good draws against Rangers, beat Celtic, beat Hearts. So there were highs in amongst it, but there was a lot of dross as well.
Yeah. One thing I really loved about Lee Johnson was his comments pre and post match. They were always enjoyable. He was very much, we've said it in this podcast before, he's very much the David Brent of Scottish football for a good while, which was fun for everyone else. But did Hibs fans enjoy that aspect as well? Did they kind of, was it an endearing kind of aspect about him as a person?
Do you know, with these things, it's endearing when you win. And as soon as you don't win, folk were all over it. And they just jump on it and you think, oh, you know, just give a straight answer to something. And I'll be honest, I liked him. I liked Lee Johnson. I quite enjoyed his interviews. I always knew what he was driving at, even the more bizarre ones. I knew what he meant. And I think most people knew what he meant, but they would be quite, he just talks nonsense. Nobody's meant to understand that. As soon as we were getting beaten, it was a very easy stick to beat him with.
Aye. He's been really backed this summer.
Mm.
Dylan Levitt, Ellie Yuan coming in, obviously had him on loan. Dylan Venter as well.
Mm.
That's big money that Hibs have spent this summer. Do you think he deserved more time? Do you think this stage in the season, okay, it has been bad domestically, but he got through the horror show in Andorra. He got through the other tie in Europe.
Luzern,
thank you. It's that typical thing. Was it too early? Have Hibs board maybe listened to the fans too early?
I don't think so, right? It's a really difficult one to gauge, right? So you're absolutely right. The backing's been incredible from the board. And we shouldn't forget they also got Martin Boyle back as well. Martin Boyle was sold for $3 million and came back in the next transfer window. And although he spent the season out injured, he was still a huge signing for us. He came back to fitness this summer. So there's the bones of a really good squad there. And I think that probably prompted the board as well, because we don't look like an expensive team. I mean, we look like a team that's a bunch of strangers. We had, well, that, like you say, that embarrassment in Andorra. And although the second leg was good, you have to consider the level of opposition we were at. And it was expected to be good. So really, he's done well, but he's met expectations in that tie. Luzern's the one that he could probably hang his hat on and say, look, here's evidence that I can do a good job. Because they're a good team and we bossed them. Like the game at Easter Road, Hibs were fantastic. And then to go away from home and get the draw is a cracking result. But then when you're losing to St Mirren, Motherwell, Livingston, and I go back to the last point, not looking at any point like we were going to win those games. And there was nothing, like, I think in three of those games, two of those games, we had no shots on target in the first half, which is just pitiful, really. And you can stand to lose games as a Hibs fan. Like, we're not a stranger to losing games. Yeah. But there's a way to lose games, and I think Johnson just lost games in an unacceptable manner, and he did not look like he had a clue. Like the game on Saturday, he sat in the dugout, didn't move from it. And normally, you watch Lee Johnson at the touchline, he's out, he's a proper pest to the fourth official. He'd be arguing with a opposition manager. There was none of that. He just sat. I think the only sort of time he could have sprung into action was when Martin Boyle equalised, and it was to give a wee bit back to the crowd. And as he was doing that, Livingston went back up the park and scored. Yeah. And it just summed it up. And I think there was a big enough rift in the sport to say it was the right time to do it. But I'd actually made a case online on the HibsNet forum to say we need to maybe give him a wee bit more time, or at least take the pressure off, because there were so many fans that were against him. What would happen is, you would say, like, this game, this next game's must win for him. And if he doesn't win, he has to go. And then he'd win it. And then they'd go, right, well, the next game's the must win for him. Mm-hmm. And then he'd win that. And so we had the ones against Luzern away. And people were saying, well, we're 3-1 up. And if he chucks that, that's an embarrassment and a disgrace. He should go. And Madrath in the cup at the weekend. And if he loses to lower league opposition, he definitely has to go. And he came through both of those ones. And I sort of made the point and say, like, is it time to just try and back off him a wee bit and say, like, let's stop putting these ultimatums on and arbitrary, you win this or you've got to go.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And not everybody agreed with that. I thought it was like a valid question. and then, you know, we took a scudding off at Aston Villa, which everybody expects. I mean, there's no shame in what happened in the Villa game. You know, they're worth £500 million and
yeah,
Hibs are worth 12 million. I mean, that, of course they're going to pump us. You know, it's just, that's just the way of life. And they'll do it again on Thursday. But the Livingston one, you expected a reaction, and it just never came. And you thought, yeah, the guy's time's up, definitely. So I think he had enough time to at least show we were heading in the right direction, and just didn't.
Well, so Lee Johnson's time has ended. David Gray has taken charge. Former captain, a cup-winning captain as well. Do you think this is maybe the answer?
It's an interesting one with David Gray, or Sir David Gray, as we refer to him. He's sort of taken over as interim manager after Jack Ross was sacked and after Sean Maloney was sacked, so he's not a stranger at this position. I think where there'd be some resistance to him getting the job is that he's almost tarnished with being part of the coaching setup with Jack Ross, with Maloney, and now with Lee Johnson, where it hasn't succeeded. Yeah. And I don't know how big a part he's played in it. But you've got Darren McGregor who's just taken over the under-18s, and there's definitely a section of support. If you put David Gray and Darren McGregor together in the dugout and said, this is your management team, they'd be like, well, I'd give them a chance. I mean, there would be a lot of goodwill towards them.
Yeah.
But I don't think that would be the right appointment for the board. I think the board have to go and almost sort of just try to find like a showstopper for them and say, look, we know we've messed up with the last couple. This is like a spectacular appointment. Let's go for that. Don't know who that is, though.
Yeah, I suppose it'll be the job of Brian McDermott, really, the director of football. It'll be his. He'll be leading the hunt, really, won't he? And it begs the question, really, could he be the one that steps in? Because I know he's not managed in a wee while. He took time away from the game from kind of personal troubles that he's spoken about in the past. But he's had success as a manager in the past, taking Reading up to the Premier League, and he was quite well liked amongst the Leeds support, which is never an easy job to take on as well. What would your thoughts be on that? And is that realistic? Do you think there's maybe not going to happen?
So I think it would be my preference that it didn't happen, and that's not a slight on Brian McDermott. So first of all, he absolutely should have a list of targets already. Like, that's his job. This morning when he's sitting down speaking to Ben Kensel, he's saying, right, here's 1, 2, and 3 on our list that we need to go after, because they suit our style of play, they suit our ambitions, or you know, whatever it is, they meet the criteria that we're going to look for in a manager. If he's not got that list ready, then I think he's a bit negligent. They should be prepared for this. It's the whole point of having a director of football. But I think making him manager, and there's a strong case because he's got that experience. But I think what that does is it undermines either the setup that you've got at the club. So if you're going to run with a manager and a director of football, then you need to say, well, the director of football stays as the director of football. Because otherwise what will happen is you move Brian McDermott into the manager's role, and then the new director of football comes in.
Yeah.
And then your question is then, well, what happens if Brian McDermott's no good? And does Brian McDermott trust the next guy, or is he looking over his shoulder saying, actually, this guy's maybe after my job? So I think from a continuity perspective and just kind of back in the structure that we've got in place, McDermott needs to stay as director of football and be responsible for finding and hiring the next guy.
It's interesting because at Motherwell, you saw Kettlewell move back into the managerial role as well, and just think these things sometimes happen at football clubs. I also have a funny feeling that Lee Johnson was kind of instrumental in Brian getting the job. I think he was quite a key component into Brian moving to the club as well. So it must have been a really difficult time as well, it's been a difficult time on a whole for the last 6 months for Hibs. Obviously, the owner passing away as well. This next appointment is probably the most important one over the last 4 or 5 that have happened, you would say.
Yeah, I think since Lennon came in to take over for Stubbs to get us out of the Championship, I think this is the most important appointment since then. Like, Lennon obviously had to come in and get us promoted and back into the Premier League. We're a bit rudderless at the moment. The team looks like it doesn't really know what it's doing. So, and the season's only 3 games in. We can't afford to have a season of transition where the manager's coming in and saying, oh, well, these are not my players and it's going to take me time to build a squad. Whoever comes in needs to go, well, this is a group that I've got to work with, and we've got all of the rest of the season. I mean, it's just the embryonic stage of the season. 3 games in, there's absolutely no excuse for us not to still do something this season. So, very, very important appointment. The club have to get it right.
Matty Fairney there from Longbangers Podcast. What's your thoughts on this, Finn?
I mean, personally, I think regardless of situation or club or whatever, I think it's far too early in the season to let your manager go three games in, regardless of how poor your start's been in the league. When you look at it, you know, Hibs are, they're still in the League Cup quarterfinals. They've got more than enough time to turn this around. They had, I felt, fairly impressive double header showing against Lucerne to put them out of the qualifiers in the Conference League. I know they got absolutely battered by Aston Villa. And I feel like, I know they've lost the league games, but I feel like they've been quite tight margins. Obviously, they've lost by a single goal most of the time. And to me, looking at the goals they're conceding, they look like shape problems. Players being caught out of position. It might just be players trying to figure out how to play with each other. It feels like it's the kind of thing that will sort itself as the season pans out. I just think he deserved a little more time. And I'm gutted as well just to lose him out of the game, because he was absolute dynamite for a soundbite. You know, he added a lot of colour, I think, to the game. So I'll miss Lee Johnson. I'm not sure if the Hibs fans will.
Yeah, well, this is the thing, that the fans will always have their say. And if you run a club, you kind of have to listen to that. We saw this last season, Anthony, with Jack Ross at Dundee United, wasn't it? Three games, I think, was exactly the same scenario as this. You know, had a failure in Europe and then a really tough start of the domestic season. Do we just not give managers enough time?
Well, we almost saw Lee Johnson getting sacked last season. He was under serious pressure last season. And then they went on this sort of magnificent run towards the end of the season. And I actually saw a tweet yesterday, straight after the game. The tweet was basically saying, it's crazy how Aberdeen losing 6-0 to Hibs has actually turned out better for Aberdeen. Because Hibs went on this amazing run. Lee Johnson stayed in the job. You could argue that he's had some shockers as well since then as well, and that's why he's gone. But it's one of those things. I mean, when you're under that kind of pressure, and then the board back you after a run of results, if you start losing games again, you're under serious pressure, and it's like tipping point. It's even without the Hibs board giving him a vote of confidence, when you get, there was that feeling they had done. But because of his form towards the end of last season, and you just feel like, well, as soon as this turns bad, he's going to go.
Yeah, I'm certainly going to miss the Lee Johnsonisms. I think we had that last week or a couple of weeks ago. Something he said was like, we've got to be hungry men. We have to finish our supper. The weekend, it was the Lions that had their supper for sure. But there you go. Not a good week for Hibs.
Bojan Miovski to rescue a point for Aberdeen. He scores! A dramatic end to this game and what looks like being a scarcely deserved draw for Aberdeen.
Now, there's three sides, joint top of the table. 7 points they all have after the weekend. That's Celtic, St Mirren and Motherwell. And if we look straight away at St Mirren's 2-2 draw with Aberdeen, St Mirren could have went top, but were denied after a dramatic equaliser in the 10th minute of stoppage time. I think it was a handball against Alec Gogic, gave a penalty to Aberdeen. And have you seen the penalty being taken, the Miovski one? It went in, but there's suggestion that there's a... Well, just explain this to me, Finn, because Laura was going utterly batshit on our WhatsApp. She was not happy about it because there's a law about touching the ball twice, but I've looked at it and it looks kind of like if you turn that around, it's like, Jesus, like, what? It just seems a bit much to be that anal about it.
Woke up this morning and checked to see what the score was. It was 2-2, you know, dramatic late penalty. Sadly, I wasn't staying up through the night to watch St Mirren versus Aberdeen. I was trying to find the highlights somewhere, which is, as a side issue, just a total bugbear of mine, how poor the SPFL highlights are and how long it takes them to get out. But anyway, that's a conversation entirely for another day. But I managed to see the clip of the penalty on Twitter, and I can't see what the fuss is about. Like, even on the close-up of his feet, I can't really see a double hit. So I don't know what the controversy was about. But it's just a bit of a shame, I think, for St Mirren, because I think having gone down to such a bizarre goal as well. It's one of those weird situations where as the free kick's gone straight in, the goalkeeper's kind of unsighted to the last second and thinks it's gone wide and all the rest of it. But to haul themselves back into it and to put themselves 2-1 in front, look like they're going clear. Mm-hmm. It's just an absolute sucker punch to lose a goal like that.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Tough one to take for St Mirren. But, you know, a good one for the likes of Aberdeen to have that kind of comeback mentality, something they're going to kind of have coming up this week. In the Europa League playoff second leg against Haken. But we'll get into that because we spoke about Motherwell 2 being St Mirren, but Motherwell, Motherwell 1, they won against Kilmarnock. Obviously joking that Robinson's at St Mirren here, but some Super League goals in this one. Motherwell, was it Harry Payton, got a winner in the 8th minute this time of injury time against Kilmarnock.
It was more drama, and I think we're going to see lots of this kind of thing because of the extra added time. I mean, there was, 8 minutes added on at the Celtic St Johnstone game as well. So this is, I mean, it's going to be more entertaining for fans, more injury time drama, but this one sort of was another level, wasn't it? 98th minute winner. Kelly had done so well this season, having beaten Rangers and first game of the season, and Celtic, they look like a sort of dogged team. Derek McInnes teams are always hard to break down. He's got his old guards, a lot of the players that he knows well from Aberdeen there. And so for Motherwell to get the 3 points in the way they did, that'll be a huge boost for them.
I think the funniest bit of the game was watching Callum Slattery's reaction to the goal going in, because he just... If you watch it on the replay, it's brilliant. He basically just collapses to the ground, doesn't join in with the celebrations. I think it's just out of sheer relief having, you know, had his penalty saved with about 12 minutes left to play. But that was quite fun to see.
Yeah, it was funny. Yeah, he just slumps to the ground, doesn't even go in with the celebration. Total relief, like you say. Hilarious. Really good result for Dundee, getting their first win of the season. Tony Docherty, his first league win as a manager, obviously leaving. He was long-time number two to Derek McInnes, sorry. It was Luke McCowan with the goal, in fact. A massive, massive win for Dundee to get in their 3 points on the board. But if we look at Hearts, guys, they haven't won outside of Edinburgh since October last year, which is dreadful reading if you think they're going away to Greece. I know the ties at 2-2 in Europe, but they have to go away again. And if they haven't won, you know, since October last year, that is dreadful. And I know they're still a club in transition as well, Finn, but this is, you know, a real issue at the moment that Hearts have to get a grip on.
We were talking a couple of weeks ago when Laurie Dunsire, the Hearts TV commentator, was on, and he was talking about, you know, Tynecastle it can be such a cauldron. It's a difficult place for teams to go. And I think that's clearly evident from the home form. But on the road, yeah, they've been absolutely miserable. But it's something that if they have any designs on trying to challenge for third again this season, they need to sort that out, because you can't have that kind of record and still think you're going to be pushing the likes of Aberdeen for that third place.
If it's any consolation, I do think that the way that they played against Pauk, Anthony, I actually think Hearts have been good this season. I know they've had a little blip here and there off the back of European kind of competition, but they've strengthened their team pretty well, I think.
Yeah, and those kind of results in those games that you see them play at Tynecastle, they've got it in them. They've got it in them to play like that. There's Rosenborg at home, even Rosenborg away, they were decent. And then Pauk at home, they should have won that game. It was actually really hard luck on them, not that they didn't. If you've got it in you to perform like that against pretty decent level teams that are perhaps a level above most of the Scottish Premiership teams that you'd probably be playing against, you should be able to replicate that, or there should be a way of finding your team to be replicated. It might be something to do with the psychology of not playing in front of your home fans, that kind of boisterous atmosphere at Tynecastle. So it's... yeah, it's very disappointing for them to lose to Dundee away, but I think their minds at the moment might just be on Europe at them. And if they can get a great result in Greece on Thursday, they'll be forgetting all about that Dundee game. They'll be looking forward to group stage football. So It's amazing how things can turn, and I wouldn't put it past them to maybe nick a result.
For sure, yeah. I think Motherwell will go to Hearts next Sunday, so Hearts might be looking forward to a home game for sure. But it's certainly a happy Dundee. Moving on now, because Rangers fans, they had a pretty happy weekend. 2-0 winners away to Ross County, and rival Celtic were held to a goalless draw at Celtic Park against St Johnstone, a team who have been utterly dreadful this season. But in the lead-in to a massive, you know, weekend where Celtic go to Ibrox, I do wonder, Anthony, does this make Rangers favourites, not just because it's at Ibrox?
Yeah, well, I think most bookies at the moment have got them favourites to win the game. It's hard to argue with that, the way Celtic have played. And they just don't look like themselves. They look a shadow of their former selves, and it's largely the same team as the last couple of years. What that comes down to, I don't know, but they look slower. They look less motivated. There's not that same desire that. I think Alistair Johnston came back into the team Saturday, and he was showing that desire, that passion, whereas the rest of the team weren't. And can't really put my finger on what it is, and looking ahead to the weekend, it's going to be intriguing. As a journalist, it's going to be intriguing, but as a Celtic fan, it's almost quite worrying because three of your top four centre-backs are missing. Rodgers is talking about he's got his project signings in now, and now they're focusing on their on signings for the starting 11. Well, there's 6 days left. Well, not even 6 days left of the transfer window. It'll be interesting to see who they bring in, but are they just going to throw four or five new signings straight in to Ibrox? No away fans. It's just going to be a cauldron of Rangers fans. It's going to be very difficult to be confident of a win at Ibrox, the way things are at Celtic at the moment. I'm not saying it's an absolute disaster over the course of the season. I'm sure things will perhaps level out, but at the moment, there's just signs of concern. And I think a lot of Celtic fans are feeling that at the moment.
It's got a real stench of a 0-0 coming up. I've got a big feeling. But Finn, the opening weekend, we obviously saw Rangers lose to Kilmarnock. Everyone was like, "No, Celtic have sewn up the title already." I know it's all a bit tongue-in-cheek and stuff like that. But this sets up the weekend really well. Like, no matter what people say about Celtic and Rangers, and there's a lot of people in Scotland that just would rather be rid of them, this is the showpiece event that a lot of people around the world enjoy, and I think it sets up the weekend quite a nice way, I would say. What do you think?
I think it should be great, and it's one of those things as well, regardless of form going into it. The Old Firm matches always kind of take care of themselves. Like the teams know what's at stake, and they will always kind of bring their A game. And it's interesting just with looking at the league form of the teams coming into it as well, because I think it's probably something that's born out of how relentless Celtic have been for the last 2 years, particularly. Well, you know, the 18 months, the first couple of months under Postecoglou was a little bit shaky as he got that team together. But the relentlessness that they've had, which is just, I think, from the opening day of the season with Rangers dropping points and having that defeat at Rugby Park, people just assume then, well, it's like, well, they're behind already, so that gap's just going to get bigger throughout the season. But what is interesting is that Celtic, you're right, Anthony, don't quite look themselves. They don't look quite the same beast. There seems to be, I don't know if it's a mentality thing or something, because even watching the St Johnstone game, I felt watching it, they still had in their attacks that level of intensity, the quickness of passing, you know, the directness, trying to get balls into the box or the edge of the area, and, you know, Matt O'Reilly doing his thing, running in and hitting shots, Kyogo. But as the game wore on, you could just see mentally they were just like, oh, hang on a second here, if things aren't clicking today or whatever, and it seemed to be dropped deeper and deeper. St Johnstone started to get not much joy. It didn't have a lot going forward. But yeah, you kind of expect the home team, I guess, to have the advantage anyway going into it, just with the fans there and home advantage and everything. But you can never write off, you know, bizarre things happening in a Old Firm game.
The dogs bark and the caravan passes. The caravan keeps moving. The caravan keeps going.
Anthony, let's open the doors to the old transfer tavern that we used to do. what tipples have you got for me and Finn? You can start with Celtic if you want. You did kind of allude to, you know, a lot of, as Brendan Rodgers maybe said, a lot of starters they want to bring in. Can you expect a flurry on the final day, or will there be business before the final day?
Yeah, I think Celtic are going to be very busy this week. By the time people are listening to this, things will all have already changed, I'd imagine so. But Lewis Palmer is a left winger from Aris Thessalonica. He's set to be joining. He's agreed terms on a four-year deal with Celtic. He'll earn about £15,000 per week. Celtic are just waiting for his visa to be processed, and he'll travel to Glasgow to complete a medical and finalise his terms. I mean, Celtic's priorities have been to sign a left winger to replace Jota. They have signed wingers. They've signed Tilio, who's injured, and Yang, who played on Saturday as well. But neither of those are traditional left wingers, which Rodgers has always wanted. So they had a look at Podence at Wolves, but it looks more like they're further along the line with Palma. They also want to sign a left back and a goalkeeper if they can move Sigrist on. So that's... those two positions could be strengthened. And remember, Rodgers is saying he wants players who are going to go straight into the starting lineup. So how they're going to manage to do that in a week, it's going to be interesting to see. Across the other side of the city, we've just seen Yanis Hadji, Rangers, move to Alaves on loan. Glenn Kamara is getting closer to joining Leeds. We believe that's a deal worth around £5 million. Rangers also looking to offload Robbie McCrory and Scott Wright as well before the window closes. Also, Ben Davies' future is a bit uncertain at the moment. There's been a few reports that he could be moving on. And Rangers have also been linked with Harry Suter at Leicester. He's sort of fallen out of favour under Enzo Maresca after his big money move. And that'd be interesting if Rangers can get a deal there, perhaps even a loan, and have the Suter brothers at the heart of their defence. with Aberdeen also closing in on a striker. They've been busy last week, actually, bringing in James McGrath and Jensen, the Finland international. So they're looking to sign Pape Habib Gaye. He's Senegal under-20 international. He's 23 now.
Good guy?
Yeah. I don't know. I just do the news. It's like I get the football expert to do that. A lot of the time I get told about these players, and I know just as much as anyone else who can do a Google search on these players. They're paying about £500,000 for them, so serious money for Aberdeen, and Aberdeen have been spending big this summer.
Is that maybe an inkling that someone like Miofsky and Duke might be away?
I'm not so sure. I mean, I hate predicting these things, but I reckon they'll manage to keep hold of them this summer, both of Miofsky and Duke. I think Duke is showing real potential, but he's still raw. And if he can have a little run in the well, he might even be in the Europa League. If he can have a little run in Europe and score some goals in Europe, that's when clubs might actually make a bid. That's when it maybe turns from interest or monitoring to an actual bid. And I think that will work well for both for Duke and for Aberdeen, because Duke will have perhaps a higher calibre of club looking at him if he does well in Europe, and Aberdeen can raise the price. Other than that, in terms of like international interest, there's been interest in Lawrence Shanklin from Saudi Arabia. That might be something we monitor. There's no bids yet, but it's the business end of the transfer window also in Saudi Arabia. So perhaps there might be some kind of move. And just out of the sort of Scottish Premiership sort of bubble, in terms of the Scotland national team, it'll be interesting to see if Scott McTominay leaves during this window. We've already seen West Ham move fall through, and it fell through with Harry Maguire as well. Our understanding is that West Ham are going to go back in for Harry Maguire. And does that mean they'll also go back in for Scott McTominay? Or will someone else go in for Scott McTominay? He's very much sort of second choice at the moment under Ten Hag. Mason Mount being out for a wee while might change that a little bit, but Man United definitely value him, but he might just want guaranteed first team football. West Ham would have been able to offer that to him, and I'm sure other Premier League or other European teams would be able to offer that to him.
I'm sure that'll come as great news to Laura, that literally weeks after she's left West Ham United that Scott McTominay, one of her heroes, might be joining the club. I'm sure that'll go down well when she finds that out.
Kieran Tierney has left Arsenal and he's gone to Real Sociedad. Anthony, have you got any more detail on this? Is this just a loan deal?
Yeah, it's just a straight loan. So originally, Real Sociedad had wanted a loan with an option to buy, but Arsenal were either only going to entertain a straight loan with his wages fully covered or a loan with an obligation to buy, meaning that they would have to buy the player. And whatever fee, Arsenal would still command a huge fee for Kieran Tierney, even though he sort of has fallen out of favour with Mikel Arteta. But he'll be playing in the Champions League. Real Sociedad are a Champions League team this season. And he'll be playing in La Liga. So a bit more, I don't know, he'll just add a bit of a different aspect to his game, different culture, all that kind of thing that is positive, I think, when you see a Scotland national team player play for their club. Hopefully it can be a good move for him because I think he's too good a player to not be playing games. It's just a shame the way, I think it's more to do with the style of play that Arsenal have. And he's not really an inverted fullback. Arteta likes that. He's more of a traditional fullback, overlapping, getting balls into the box. And he's very good defensively as well. So I think he's just fallen into a team that plays differently to his style. So I think he could have gone elsewhere in the Premier League as well. But he's chosen to go to Real Sociedad.
Do you know, that's one of the weird things that I was wondering about this. Because it, obviously it's a stylistic thing that I think he's just fallen out of favour with Arteta. But when you look at his performances for the national team, like he, because of him and Robertson when they're playing together, Robbo's the overlapping fullback, and Tierney does still do it because I think that's naturally his game. But he is very disciplined, and he does tend to do these kind of like pushing forward from a centre back, a left centre back type position. So I didn't fully understand it because I think in terms of what he can give you, which is either marauding overlapping fullback, or I think he's perfectly capable as an inverted fullback, but it's personal preference for the managers, isn't it? But I'm exactly the same as you, Anton. I just think in terms of the national team, we need our best players to be playing regularly at the highest level. And if he's not going to get a sniff at Arsenal, I mean, he could pretty much walk into any other Premier League side, probably apart from Liverpool, where he's got his international teammate there. But it's great that he's gone to one of the strongest leagues in the world and he'll be playing Champions League football. It's brilliant. So it's a great move. And hopefully kind of he's able to kick on from there.
Elsewhere, guys, Finn, can you tell me what's happened in the Scottish Championship at the weekend?
Championship, what a league, man. Absolutely brilliant. So you had the high-flying Queen's Park, who were unbeaten in their opening couple of games, played Partick Thistle and lost their first game of the season. Partick Thistle won their first game of the season. It's interesting because that's quite a few substantial victories now for Thistle over Queen's Park. I think they battered them in the playoff. At the tail end of last season, it was like 8-3 in aggregate, and I think they had a 4-0 win over them as well in the league a couple of weeks before that in April. So yeah, interesting. Arbroath as well got off the mark. That was their first win of the season, beating Morton 3-0 in Greenock, which I thought was a pretty impressive result. It's not looking good for Cali Thistle, rock bottom. They've lost 6 straight matches. That's stretching back obviously into the League Cup campaign. Doesn't look like it's going to be a particularly happy season for them up there. And of course, it was the Fife Derby as well at the weekend, and Raith came away with the points in that one. Sam Stanton with the only goal of the game. So yeah, just it's my favourite division in Scotland. Absolutely love the Championship.
Brilliant. Well, I'll take you through League One then. Big moment for Annan, who won their first ever match in League One. Came from 2-0 down as well to win 3-2. A double from Dominic Docherty. Love names that alliterate. It just makes them sound cooler. And then Tommy Goss with the winner, 14 minutes from time. It's a big moment for the Gallybankies. It was a bittersweet one too, because if any Annan fans remember, Edinburgh City actually beat them in the playoffs final about 2 years ago, 2 seasons ago. So it was like finally getting a win over them after all of that was quite a good feeling probably. Hamilton are still top of the league. Perfect record, 4 wins out of 4. And they've not even conceded a single goal which is really impressive. But Falkirk, they're also unbeaten. They're 2 points adrift of the Aggies. They thumped Alloa on Saturday after a solid kind of midweek win over Stirling. And Queen of the South, mighty Queens, still lurking behind them. Terrible goals to game ratio for us, to be fair, but we're still hanging in there, 9 points in third place. Lovely stuff. Finn, do you want to tell me about League Two?
Pretty tight at the top at League Two. There's four teams on 8 points so far. Dumbarton leading the way on goal difference, but really nice to see Bonnyrigg Rose and Spartans, along with Stranraer, setting the pace at the top of League Two. At the other end of the table, team that I tipped to be up the top end of the table this season, Clyde seemed to be in a bit of free fall, rooted to the bottom. And it's always, I know it's early in the season, but it's always a bit of a worry when your team is starting to struggle at that end of League Two, because, you know, there's the very real danger that you could drop out the league system altogether. So I'm sure that'll be a real concern to the bully wee, but there's still plenty of time to turn it around. So yeah, it's all happening in the lower leagues.
You tipped Clyde, mate. That was the, you know.
In fairness, it's the only one of the tips at the start of the season that I've kind of been massively wrong on. So I did tip Dumbarton. Okay. I did tip Dumbarton to be the pace setters in the league again this season. But anyway, yeah, got Clyde massively wrong.
I love it. Absolutely love it. Well, that's it for another week. Anthony, I doff my cap to you. I hope you have an excellent final day in the transfer window. I'm sure it will be wild at Sky Sports News. And thanks to Matty Fernie as well from the Long Bangers podcast. Hopefully you guys get to enjoy a manager sometime soon. So another week passes us by. If you did enjoy it, please go and subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's always lovely to see our faces and go, like, that's what the guy that I hate looks like. So, yeah, follow us on TikTok, Facebook as well. And it's that time now where I say, go and listen to something else. Goodbye.